Bum bum ba dum bum ba dum bum bum ba dum bum bum ba da dum bum ba dum bum ba dum bum bum ba dum bum bum.
Welcome to Everyday Musicality, the podcast in which we discuss all things related to Gordon's music learning theory and how it can help unlock the inner musician that lives inside of all of us. I'm your host, Heather Scholdeis, music educator and faculty member for the Gordon Institute for Music Learning. In this episode, I give an introduction to the partial synthesis level of learning. Hello and welcome to the Everyday Musicality Podcast. It's been 2 weeks and I am back, just like I promised. I will admit that I'm recording this on Monday, February 12th, and I'll admit it crossed my mind that I just don't have time today to do an episode. It is about 3 o'clock right now, and I have to leave at about 3:45 to go pick my child up from school. I've been working all day on other things. That took longer than I anticipated. Plus, as you may be able to hear, I have a bit of a cold that I caught from said child. And so this is not the best time for me to be recording an episode that requires lots of singing because it won't sound good. So I thought, gee, I really don't have time to do any sort of a scripted episode. I'm just going to skip it for this week. And then I reminded myself that doing something is better than doing nothing. So I am today again going to just be ad-libbing, and I am going to start talking about the partial synthesis level of learning like I've been promising for months. So in previous episodes, I'll link to those in the show notes off the top of my head. I have no idea what episode numbers they were, but in previous episodes, I gave an overview of the skill learning sequence, which is the core theoretical framework for how we help students develop audiation and musical skills in music learning theory-based teaching. In that overview episode, I quickly ran through all the levels of that skill learning sequence and talked about how we can move through those levels in different ways, for example, through stepwise movement or bridging movement. I'll link to that episode. And then I did a mini series of episodes in which I talked about the first level of the skill learning sequence, which is aural-aural. I gave an overview of what that level entails, sort of the spirit of that level, and then several episodes looking at tonal skills we might develop, rhythm skills we might help students develop, as well as harmonic skills and instrument applications we might help students learn at the aural-aural skill level. I also talked about how we might bridge from the aural-aural level to one of the levels of inference learning. Remember, in the levels of discrimination learning, of which aural-aural is the first, we are always helping students learn by listening to or watching a music or movement model. We don't expect kids to figure things out independently when they are in discrimination learning. That comes later in the inference levels of learning, where students are figuring something new out on their own, or they are coming up with their own musical material through things like improvisation or composition. And students' ability to be successful in those kinds of activities that require inferences depends on the quality and the depth and breadth of the experiences they've had previously at discrimination learning. So in that mini series of episodes about the aural-aural skill level, in addition to talking about the teaching and learning that might go on at the aural-aural level, I also talked about how we might bridge from the aural-aural level to one of the levels of inference learning. Again, I'll link to all those episodes in the show notes. A bit later, I did a mini series of episodes on the next level of the skill learning sequence, which is verbal association. Remember, at verbal association, we start helping students associate syllables, so tonal solfege and rhythm syllables, to the musical material they're already audiating and that they've learned at the aural-aural level on neutral syllables. also because we're starting to use solfege and rhythm syllables at the verbal association skill level, we start to use those syllables as a tool to label things like tonality, meter, and harmonic function. So in that mini series of episodes on the verbal association skill level, I gave an overview of the skill level of verbal association. I devoted specific episodes on tonal skill development and rhythm skill development at the verbal association level. And I also focused on harmonic skills that can be developed at verbal association, as well as instrumental applications at the verbal association skill level. Now that I'm thinking about it, I think maybe I didn't talk about harmony and instruments until after I had gotten through verbal association. So don't go digging through the episodes looking for those things with the aural-oral episodes. I think I went back after verbal association and just talked about harmony and instruments in one fell swoop for both aural-oral and verbal association. And then, of course, at the end of the verbal association mini-series of episodes, I talked about how we might bridge from verbal association to levels of inference learning. And once more, I'll link to all of the episodes that I'm mentioning on the different skill levels in the show notes. So now let's start looking at the partial synthesis level of the skill learning sequence in music learning theory. One important thing to keep in mind always is that partial synthesis is a level of discrimination learning. And as I just mentioned a minute or two ago, at discrimination levels of learning, we are not expecting students to figure things out independently yet. We are not asking them to apply their knowledge and skill and their audiation to unfamiliar things. At discrimination learning, and thus at partial synthesis, we are modeling skills for the students, and we are helping them recognize what has already been performed and labeled for them. So that's an important piece because it took me probably several years to really wrap my head around partial synthesis and realize that I had misunderstood, that what I thought was partial synthesis was actually generalization, because I hadn't been giving students the answers, the tools, explicitly to recognize what they were audiating. So just keep that in mind, that if we are just throwing students into the deep end and asking them to figure out something on their own, that's generalization, not partial synthesis. Okay, so what the heck is partial synthesis? Well, before that, at the verbal association level, students have started to give external meaning to the familiar content and context that they've been experiencing through the use of solfege and rhythm syllables. So at aural-aural, students start to develop audiation and the ability to perform familiar patterns, familiar tonal patterns and rhythm patterns, and starting to audiate the tonal and rhythmic context of the familiar music they've been experiencing. And at aural-aural, all of that is done with neutral syllables, which means that at aural-aural, the students really don't have the tools to give music external meaning. They can give it internal meaning through their own audiation, through their own sense of where tonal center is and beat levels, and they can start to sense tonality and meter implicitly through their own audiation. But it really isn't until the verbal association skill level that we can give students tangible tools through which they can start giving music external meaning. And it's those tools that really help them understand tonality and meter and function as well. So I suppose we could start talking about tonality or meter at the aural-oral skill level, but in the absence of notation and theory, and in the absence of an audiation-based solfege system, it's really hard to give students any sort of external tools with which they can start to recognize tonality or meter. But when we get to the verbal association skill level, we start to introduce tonal solfege and or rhythm syllables, and those can give us that tangible tool that we can use to start to name tonalities, meters, and harmonic functions. So after that, after at verbal association, the students have started to learn solfege and rhythm syllables, or each of those separately. It doesn't have to be both happening together. But the students have started to learn those syllables and are learning to name the tonality that they're hearing, or the meter that they're hearing, or the harmonic function that they're hearing, based on the syllables that are being applied. And remember, at this point at verbal association, students are not applying those syllables independently. They're not putting those syllables to unfamiliar musical material. It's hearing a musical model, often the teacher, putting those syllables to the musical material and showing students how to name those things. And then the student might perform that musical material as well with the syllables, but not until after it has been modeled for them. Next, students are ready to begin learning to recognize the tonal or rhythmic context of familiar content with the solfege and syllables removed. And this is the primary goal of partial synthesis. By teaching students to recognize the tonality or the meter of familiar patterns performed without solfege or rhythm syllables, we help students develop the readiness to infer tonality and meter independently later on. And that happens through generalization, which is an inference level of learning. So what the heck does partial synthesis mean anyway? Ugh, more of that MLT jargon. I know. But if you can at least grasp and appreciate the reasoning behind the name, that's the most important thing. So the partial synthesis skill level is named partial synthesis because it synthesizes the aural-aural and the verbal association levels of learning. So we're taking aural-aural and we're synthesizing it with verbal association. With sufficient experiences at aural-aural and at verbal association, the students will have developed a solid listening and performing vocabulary in terms of specific tonal and or rhythm content. So they will have developed a solid listening and performing vocabulary of tonal and rhythm patterns. And they will have developed a certain level of fluency in performing familiar content with tonal solfege or rhythm syllables, as well as using the solfege or rhythm syllables as a tool for recognizing and naming tonality, meter, and or function of familiar content. And I should also mention that could be harmonic function tonally, or that could be rhythm function if we're talking the rhythm side of things. Those skills provide the necessary readiness for the partial synthesis level of learning because in partial synthesis, students begin to assimilate the sounds learned at the aural-aural level with the syllables and names learned at the verbal association level. So again, it's called partial synthesis because we're synthesizing aural-aural and verbal association. We're synthesizing the sounds we learn at aural-aural with the syllables and the labels we learn at the verbal association skill level. And that happens by recognizing tonal or rhythmic context. By the way, today we're not going to talk about why it's only partial synthesis. We'll talk about that later on in the future once we've talked about notation at the symbolic association level, because after that we'll talk about composite synthesis. The main focus of partial synthesis is learning to compare and recognize tonalities or meters of familiar content. Because the goal of partial synthesis is recognition of context, the focus is not on individual patterns at this skill level, because we don't really get context from an individual pattern. Instead, familiar patterns are synthesized into a series at partial synthesis so that they collectively can imply objective tonality or meter. A pattern on its own doesn't really imply a tonality or meter, but a series of patterns in succession, or a song, which is essentially a series of patterns in succession, that can imply objective tonality or objective meter. I should also quickly mention, if we're just looking at rhythm, it could be a series of rhythm patterns or it could be a chant. It doesn't have to be a song. So partial synthesis now focuses on a series of patterns, tonal patterns and rhythm patterns, rather than focusing on individual patterns. And that series of tonal patterns or rhythm patterns could take the form of a set of familiar patterns performed in succession, or a familiar song or chant, because those are made up of patterns. In addition to dealing with series rather than individual patterns, another difference between partial synthesis and previous discrimination levels is that multiple contexts are compared in partial synthesis. Instead of recognizing and labeling just one tonality or one meter at a time, as in aural-aural and verbal association, students learn to compare two tonalities or two meters in partial synthesis. So at the partial synthesis skill level, students learn to compare the contexts of two parallel examples performed without solfege or rhythm syllables. A third difference between partial synthesis and previous levels of discrimination learning is that the teacher should not establish tonal or rhythmic context prior to performing the prompts. If you were to establish context for the students, this would defeat the purpose of partial synthesis. The goal of partial synthesis is for students to begin learning to sense the tonality or meter themselves by what Gordon described as learning to audiate pattern relations as they are being established. So as we are hearing those patterns, our audiation starts to build an understanding of the relations between those patterns. And those pattern relations give rise to our audiation of tonality or meter. I should also quickly mention there is some disagreement about what goes on at partial synthesis from different music learning theory practitioners that you may have heard about if you're a member of one of the social media groups on Facebook, for example. There's several music learning theory teacher groups, and several teachers have blogs and things like that where they talk about music learning theory topics. And some people see partial synthesis as more a matter of being able to sense the deep structure to music. So being able to sense and audiate the essential tonal and rhythm patterns of the musical material. And yes, that is going on, but it's really more broadly a matter of being able to take in those essential tonal patterns and essential rhythm patterns to sense the tonal context or the rhythm context that those patterns are forming in our audiation. At least that's how I look at it. I was hoping that maybe I could have on a guest or two in the future as I continue these episodes on partial synthesis. So maybe we'll hear some differing opinions and get a chance to talk through them, and maybe I'll change my mind about what I think. But back to what I was saying, that either way you slice it, partial synthesis is where students are learning to audiate patterns in relation to each other. This is also why the series of patterns at partial synthesis should be performed on a neutral syllable. We don't perform the patterns on solfège at partial synthesis because the solfège would give away the answer for what the tonality or the meter is, even if students aren't audiating the patterns in relation to each other and their sense of tonal and rhythm context. So when we perform a series of patterns at partial synthesis, it's done on neutral syllables, and then the syllables are used as a tool. According to Gordon in his book, Learning Sequences in Music, the most recent edition, quote, use of a neutral syllable is a beginning step in bridging the gap between discrimination learning and inference learning, end quote. That's on page 113. So that's why, again, at partial synthesis, students are not making inferences, but by taking away the syllables, we are starting to help them learn to apply the syllables to the sounds that they're hearing without syllables, and to start to use those syllables as a tool in their audiation. Wow, I'm saying lots of words. Hopefully this is all making sense. And if it doesn't, then in the future episodes on the skills that we might teach and learn at partial synthesis, hopefully then it will start to make more sense. So again, just to recap, the main features that characterize partial synthesis are, first, that we're not dealing with individual patterns at partial synthesis. We're now dealing with multiple patterns, a series of patterns, or a song or a chant, which essentially consists of a series of patterns. Another unique feature of partial synthesis is that we are now making it a point to compare two different tonalities or two different meters. Unlike verbal association, where we were just labeling one tonality or one meter at a time. And the third unique characteristic about partial synthesis is that we make sure we do not establish tonal or rhythm context before we perform the patterns for students. And we perform them on neutral syllables and start to show students how to use the syllables as a tool to recognize the context of the series of patterns that they're hearing. And of course, remember that despite these differences, these unique characteristics of partial synthesis as compared to aural-aural or verbal association, it is still important that students still learn by rote in response to a musical model at partial synthesis, because partial synthesis is a level of discrimination learning. So as the teacher, we need to make sure that we initially present the prompts, the parallel examples of the two tonalities or two meters that the students are learning to compare and recognize. And we need to make sure that we walk them through how we know the answer. So we model the prompts and we say, I knew this one was in this tonality or this meter because, and I knew this one was in this tonality or this meter because. And by doing that, that is how we are modeling the answer for students, so that then when we go back to the prompts and ask students to recognize the tonality or the meter or the resting tone or the tonic pattern or the microbeats of what they're hearing, it's always the two familiar prompts that we modeled to begin with. We're not pulling in other musical material. We're not pulling in other patterns in that particular activity. We're just sticking to the two prompts that we have already modeled the answer to. And then we're seeing if students can recognize which is which by making those comparisons. Pardon my stuffy nose. If we didn't start by modeling the prompts and walking the students through how we knew the tonality or the meter and why, then that would be generalization, because we would be asking the students to independently identify the tonality or the meter. Now, that's totally fine. That's great if you want to do that, as long as you are conscious that that is what you are asking students to do. Don't be like me and start off teaching partial synthesis like I did for at least a year, maybe more, thinking I was doing partial synthesis when I was actually having them engage in generalization, which was cool. Some of them could do it, but it also explained why a lot of them were not yet ready to figure out the tonality or the meter of unfamiliar material by themselves. Because I didn't understand partial synthesis. I wasn't giving them the experience of partial synthesis, of being able to have a model showing them what the tonality or the meter is and why. How we know, using the syllables that we can already audiate, to recognize the tonality or the meter of the prompts that we're hearing. Just like with the previous levels of discrimination learning, we have to always be conscious of whether or not we're giving students the answer by modeling before we ask them to respond. This is why I like to purposefully use the verbs recognize and identify differently. I personally like to use the verb recognize when I'm talking about discrimination learning, because this implies that I've already given the answer, or someone, some way, has given the answer or modeled the skill for students with that material, and they are recognizing and possibly also performing the skill themselves. I like to reserve the verb identify for when I'm talking about inference learning, most often generalization. And that is because to me, the word identify implies for me that the students are independently identifying the answer, or they're independently figuring out the skill. Maybe they're identifying the proper solfège syllables that would go with an unfamiliar pattern, or the meter of a new song or chant or recording that they're hearing. They're identifying it, which to me implies they are doing it independently. Whereas recognize implies it's already been modeled for them, and now they are simply recognizing the answer or the skill that they're performing. Whew, that feels really long-winded, but I really think it's important to understand these characteristics of the partial synthesis skill level so that we are teaching with intention when we're planning partial synthesis learning activities for our students. I will get into, in the next few episodes, some specific skills that students might be learning at the partial synthesis skill level. I'll also talk about what they might look like in learning sequence activities, as well as classroom activities, and talk about specific strategies for teaching partial synthesis in learning sequence activities and classroom activities. I'm not 100% sure yet, but I'm tentatively thinking I will talk about tonal skills at the partial synthesis level in one episode and rhythm skills in another. And then maybe I can also find someone who might be willing to have a chat with me about partial synthesis that we could share with you. Before I go, I just jumped on the GIML website, the website of the Gordon Institute for Music Learning, and I thought I would just give you a little heads up of some upcoming events that will be happening. First, this Saturday, February 17th, the California GIML chapter will be hosting current GIML president, Butch Marshall, who will be giving a presentation out there at Fresno State, I believe it is. I will link to that in the show notes. That's from 2 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, I think, if this calendar shows the correct time according to time zone. And then on Monday, February 19th, there will be a GIML quarterly online workshop, and this will focus on choral applications of music learning theory with brand new GIML faculty member Crystal McCoy. And then next Saturday, February 24th, there will be an online faculty hangout with instrumental faculty member Sharon Saul. Remember, those faculty hangouts are opportunities for GIML members to just connect with GIML faculty members or other individuals that have been invited and ask questions, get advice, maybe troubleshoot some things that you're struggling with, or just to, you know, all around share ideas and connect with other folks who are using music learning theory or trying to use music learning theory or just are starting to wrap their brains around music learning theory. Again, I'll link to all those events in the show notes as well as all the episodes I mentioned previously on levels of the skill learning sequence. And in the meantime, if you have questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, please get in touch. You can email me or send me a voice memo at everydaymusicality@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and let's keep musicking every day.